of all the idiots in all the idiot villages in all the idiot worlds, you stand alone.
Welcome. Welcome.
It's the Mike O'Mara Show.
Peace be with you.
Hell yeah.
Welcome.
You're like Dustin Hoffman.
Welcome back to the Mike O'Mara Show.
Welcome.
877-365-3636. That is the number to call if you would like to get on the Redidio. It's Friday!
Yeah!
Do you feel like it's Friday yet?
I don't.
I'm trying to feel like it's Friday.
Uh-huh. You're weary, though.
I had me a day, but yeah. I'm still trying to, you know, acknowledge the fact that it's Friday.
It's over
and
now.
I'm looking forward to it. We did get some good news today on the show. Mr. Burbank is telling me that the applications have started to come in for the Buzz Babes.
Babes are stepping up, Mike.
Sure.
That is going well. We're going to get an update on that from you a little bit later on, but it's time to talk minimum wage.
Cool.
We've all been there. I think everybody's been there. Let's.
Why are you speaking in past tense?
Let's bring this gentleman on. This is a guy that's written a book entitled, Do You Want Fries With That? A White-Collar Burnout Experiences Life at Minimum Wage. Let's please welcome Prelo Alexander. Prelo, how are you?
Mike, everything's going my way. How are you, sir?
Prelo, that is, I don't believe I've ever interviewed anybody or even spoken with anybody named Prelo. It's spelled P-R-I-O-U-L-E-A-U. Is that a French kind of name? What is that there?
Yeah, it's one of those freakazoid Charleston, South Carolina names that gets passed along family to family, unfortunately.
Oh, okay, so it's down in Bayou type. Prelo, would you bring the gumbo upstairs, please? Very good. Prelo, what's your background for writing this book? And I guess the whole deal is you were a successful guy and you decided you'd want to slum it for a while, right?
Yeah, I was. I worked in the advertising industry for about 14 years. I was at a full-service ad agency. And
I will tell you, being in the radio business, that does make you somewhat snake-like.
Yeah.
We have to point that out to you. Somewhat snake-like, very close to radio account executives who are, you know, partially snake-like, and then, of course, general managers who are full-blooded cobras.
And they shed their skin.
Yes, they do.
Totally agree. But I, like you being the on-air personality, I was on the creative side. So I wouldn't actually, you
know. Left-brainer.
I wasn't duking it out with the radio account executives, but it's a business that has a fairly high burnout rate, and I'd been in about 13 years, and I started, you know, daydreaming about other jobs, and I took one of those online personality profiles, you know, to help you find your dream job.
Uh-huh. Let me ask you about those. I mean, do those normally, I would think of those online profiles, they get you, like they upgrade you. They put you in a better job that's better suited. Does it go in both directions?
Well, the only jobs they could come up with me for were sniper and beer taster.
Sniper.
And
that's pretty funny. I like that.
They weren't hiring in that area.
And, sniper.
My wife said, look, I think you're at the point where it's either quit or take a hostage.
So you just hated the ad business? Is that what it was?
Yeah, I was just cooked.
All right, and, so you wrote the – but did you process this when you were going into it? Was this just an idea, or did you think before you even started it, hey, this might be a good idea for a book?
Well, I tell you where it came from was I leapt into unemployment, and you know, we thought we'd just simplify and be like that dude on Kung Fu.
Well, there's a movie that we love on this show. Have you ever seen Lost in America?
Absolutely.
Oh, so was it kind of drop out of society, that kind of deal?
I wanted to reach out and touch Indians, man.
Okay, that's perfect. I can relate. Now, how old are you, Prelo?
I'm 44 now. I was 41 when I took this leap.
That's about normal for that. That stage in one's life when you say, hey, what the hell am I going to do? And then some of us, you know, never make that decision because they have to pay alimony.
Right.
That's the way it works. So you make this decision to drop out of society, but what happened after that?
Well, you know, you can leave the white-collar world, but the white-collar bills don't leave you.
Yeah, sure. And everybody's chasing the big dream. You got the big house. You got the big payments and all
right.
that.
Right, and you got the big repairs and the insurance and the taxes, and it just goes on and on and on. And so my wife's salary was, you know, kind of, sort of keeping us from going bankrupt. And I thought, well, you know what I'll do? While I'm deciding what it is that I want to do when I grow up, I'll deliver some pizzas. And
all right. A lot. You know, incidentally, I really think I have friends of mine that have lost their jobs that actually make that transition. pizza delivery is a huge, I mean, you see guys that come to your door. I have, I don't know if you have, where, you know, you look and this 50-year-old guy comes up and he looks like he just got out of the boardroom and he's delivering pizzas.
Wow.
I really think that's the first job. That's the easiest one. Like, if the bottom falls out,
Yeah.
I think pizza delivery is right up there as far as the, you know, the job that people dive into.
You're absolutely right, because there's no application process. You just walk in and sign up for it.
Sure. And you can live in your car, too.
Unfortunately, the place where I delivered pizzas was fairly big territory. And what I found was, you know, within several days, I realized, well, I'm just delivering pizzas to buy gas so I can deliver more pizzas so I can buy gas. And
that's
more
even
pizza.
Worse now, I would imagine. Yeah. I mean, that's gotten worse. I mean, it's because, you know, most of the pizza delivery people that I know of, you have to have your own car. It's your own transportation.
Right. Absolutely.
Right. And, so you did the pizza delivery thing. No book in your mind at this point, right?
Well, you know, as I was riding around, you got a lot of time to think there as a pizza guy.
Right.
And I started thinking about how strange this new world was to me because, you know, as a white-collar guy, your job is to think and provide solutions and improve efficiencies and ideas.
Were you making good coin at your other job?
Yeah, I was making pretty good coin. I'm from Charleston, South Carolina, and the salaries here are sort of notorious low because they can get away with it because people want to move here.
Well, the reason I asked that is not just to know how much you made, but to know how much the fall was. You know, how much of the – was it a – but it was culture shock as far as your salary was concerned, right?
Oh, it was huge, mm-hmm. huge. And you know, I just got to thinking that the whole white collar thing, you change so much by the time you're in your mid-40s. And here I was at a job where you're just supposed to sort of stand there slack-jawed, and if they want your opinion, they'll give it to you.
Was there a level of freedom to it, though?
Yes.
Because, you know, I tell you, I'm speaking to a lot of people that are listening to you and listening to me right now that are on 95 and 495 and 66 and all over the country, you know, slogging home from another crap week that might be giving it a thought. You did find it kind of liberating, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. The issue is money. You know, I mean, you just – it's so hard to go from having enough money to having no money.
Yeah.
You know, if you haven't spent 2-3 decades sort of storing up the old Lost in America nest egg,
right,
then
you're screwed, right.
That stress sort of removed any freedom.
So you went from pizza delivery. What was your next activity?
I scooped ice cream. My wife put us on the Atkins diet. And
you know, it's so funny. It's funny though.
Though.
You're doing minimum wage, but you are so yuppie. You know, we're on the Atkins diet, dear. Go down and scoop ice cream. I seriously, whenever I go into any establishment, no matter what the job is, I look at it and I wonder, I really do try to evaluate it for degree of difficulty. And I would imagine, like, if you're a guy in your mid-40s, scooping ice cream, you get a little of that carpal tunnel by the end of the day, right? Was that a pain in the ass? Or the wrist, I should say?
No, the job itself was fine. It was the customers that slowly sort of do this Chinese water torture thing, and you know, I lasted about 2 months there.
Where did you work? Where did you work, Scuba? Was it a chain or was it a local place?
Local place.
Place. They'd have you. Customers pissed you off a little bit.
Oh man,
demanding, aren't they? People are demanding when it comes to just the way they want their ice cream.
Well, you know, and those little pink spoons, and I know you guys wouldn't do this, and your listeners wouldn't do this, but much of America thinks that those aren't for tasting. That's a free appetizer before they choose whatever it is.
Right.
And they'll keep asking for, you know, they don't ask, excuse me, they say, gimme the chocolate mocha, gimme the lemon custard.
Right. So, all right, we've got a list of all of these here, that it was construction, cleaning a hospital emergency room, taking tourists on a week-long wagon ride, fast food. When, on that pecking order, was there a minimum wage pecking order? Was there a minimum wage job where you were treated in an exemplary fashion, and then a minimum wage job where you were just everybody's butt boy?
Well, the fast food is pretty much the bottom of the barrel.
And you were what fast food did you work?
I really can't say, because there's a lot of stuff in the book that can get me sued.
Okay, yeah, I understand that completely. You all can't right. say what chain it was, but it was one of the burger chains?
It was one of the big three.
And that's right. where people, that is, I would imagine that's where people truly S on you.
Oh, awful.
What's the worst thing that happened when you were working at fast food?
Yes, please.
the manager, she finished about 50% of her sentences with, "or you will be terminated."
Well, that sounds fun.
Yeah, it's a real motivator.
So,
here's the thing. One of the things that really, really burned me up. Some of these kids I'm working with, you know, these are, you know, 19-year-old kids that have three kids themselves, and when a burger would get messed up, no, we don't save that so that the person can go home, can take it home and feed their family. We throw it in the garbage right. because we want to discourage people from messing up hamburgers.
So you might have people that are not like you, that have not been a white-collar worker, people that maybe are immigrants in many cases that are coming into this environment. And did you work with a lot of immigrants, obviously, when you were doing this? Did you have some new Americans that were, or people that were here illegally? Did you deal with a lot of that situation?
That I saw primarily in construction.
Oh, really?
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I shouldn't say really. Of course, I know that. I mean, you see that on job sites a lot. And was the population of construction workers that were here from other countries, was it illegal or legal stuff?
Oh, yeah, they were all totally illegal.
All totally
wow.
illegal.
Wow. Yeah,
absolutely.
A lot of day laborers, guys that would be picked up in somebody's pickup truck at the beginning of the day and go out to the job site?
Actually, I was the laborer because I didn't have any skills.
Right.
The illegals that came in, they would usually come in a crew. And I tell you, those guys can work.
Oh, my God. I think everybody knows that. Yeah. Certainly in the Washington, D.C. area. Right. If you've had anything done construction-wise, you mm-hmm. see they the way it. Some of these crews work there. But the fast food was really, really bad. Cleaning a hospital emergency room, was that like after the end, after people had been in there puking and stuff like that?
Oh, man. Have you
was
ever
that
seen
bad?
You've seen the TV show Cops, right?
Right. Yeah.
Okay, well, working in the ER is like watching Cops in 3D smell-o-vision.
Oh, wow.
And it is so bad. If you got paid $1 million a year, it wouldn't be enough to work it
out. What was your worst mess there in the ER?
Oh, dude, quite frankly, I'm not going to bring it up over the air.
Yes, bring it up over the air. We like grossness here. Was it shooting, puking, what was it, blood, or was it some other bodily fluid?
Bile.
It was a girl who had a discomfort in her esophagus.
Yeah.
And the doctor went in to examine her, and she went into a coughing fit.
Right.
And a gray golf ball came coughing up out of her throat and onto the table.
Did you ever find the garden hose?
And then it unwound, and it was worms.
Oh, my God.
Thank you.
Man, you would have won a contest we had here about Gross Me Out. We played a game called Gross Me Out.
Uh-huh.
And it was worms?
The doctor said, admit this woman and get a tech in here to clean this up.
Oh, and you were the tech?
The nurse looked at me and I said, don't look at me. I don't work here anymore. And I left.
And did you quit? Did you quit it on site? Did you quit right there?
Good for you.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
You know, I was going to ask you, Prilo, you're aware, of course, that some people do what you did, but they don't plan it. Right? They just end up really living this. I'm curious about that. You know, there are people that this actually happens to. What kind of insight does the book give those people?
Well, I tell you, I was always very cognizant of the fact that I was doing this because I chose to.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I was at all times very careful to be respectful towards my fellow employees, and I never made fun of them.
Right.
What I made fun of was sort of the insanity of whichever industry
sure.
I was in.
No kidding.
The customers. The fun is all poked at myself. What an idiot I am. And that's where the humor came from.
How soon?
I think it's mean spirited to make fun of somebody who's in a tough situation.
I agree with you. How soon when you started this this journey did you say, hey, this is going to be a book? I mean, was it right about the time you started doing the pizza deliveries?
Yeah. It was after riding around in the pizza for a while, and it's interesting. I have had an agent from a manuscript I'd written a few years ago that didn't sell, and I called him up, and I said, hey, Keith, I got this idea for a book, and I explained it, and he said, man, I love it. That sounds great. How far along are you? And I said, well, you know, this phone call. He said, well, you know, call me in a year when it's done. Uh-huh. And I was like, dude, hold on. I got to actually go work these jobs. I mean, I actually have to do this. Can't you find out if somebody would be interested in advance?
Right.
And he said, oh, yeah, sure, sort of like a presidential autobiography. And I said, yeah, that's it. And, you know, he was laughing when he hung up the phone.
So what is the most important thing that you've learned, Grasshopper, from this epic journey here? And are you back? No, you're not back in the workforce. Of course not. You're an author now, right? You're just
selling a book.
You're just doing your book stuff and just chilling out and eating French fries.
Let me tell you, they just print money once you become an author.
I'm
thinking about going back to delivering pizzas so I can, you know, I don't know, come home with $10.
Now, how is the book doing? What is the status of it? Is it going with wide distribution? Rob's giving me a thumbs up right now. Will this book result in you being back on the minimum wage line?
Well, the book, it is national distribution. I'm proud to say it's available at you know, bricks and mortar bookstores or online. And please, for the love of God, all your listeners, go buy it. Throw me a bone here.
Throw you a burger. Is this southernfriedwriter.com? Is that where people go?
That is actually my website if you want to find. And there's an excerpt from the book there if you want to check it out and see if I actually know what I'm doing.
Ah. Okay, and then where do they go if they want to get the book?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble.
Oh, all the big ones.
Their
all
local
right.
independent bookseller.
All the big ones.
Yes, sir.
And did Stephen Colbert do something on you, on the Colbert Report?
Not yet, but Stephen did read it. He gave me a blurb, and I was very excited about that.
Cool. I look forward to it. I haven't gotten a chance to read it just yet, but it is a fascinating subject. I'm curious, really, because, you know, I don't think a lot of people realize this. I mean, for the love of God, you got high school kids that don't take certain jobs because it doesn't pay them enough.
Right.
What about the people that are out there literally, and this is the way they're making their living? How do they deal with that? I mean, you've got a wife, and are they working two jobs, three jobs? Did you get hobnobbed with people enough to get a little perspective on it? I would imagine.
Yeah, and the truth of the matter is, you can't. It's not a living wage. If you worked two minimum wage jobs, it's not a living wage. And you know, I think that we all who are blessed sort of feel righteous when we hear that some dummy has got, you know, $32,000 in credit card debt. Well, you know, they ain't on the QE2 with that credit card.
Right.
They're trying to buy groceries.
Right. Right. And I watched a documentary last night on, I think it was on Showtime, I'm not sure, called Maxed Out, about how the credit card companies prey upon people. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Prilo, we wish you a lot of luck with your book. It sounds like it's an interesting little journey there. And, man, you got us with the worms. That
awesome.
Rock
is
great.
Awesome.
Prilo Alexander, the book is You Want Fries With That? A White Collar Burnout Experiences Life at a Minimum Wage. Prilo, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Man, that's I got a million of them. I mean, we all have them. Everybody's got minimum wage stories.
You know who had a really fascinating story is during the last writer's strike. I don't know if we ever got to this on the air.
Greg Garcia
took a job at Flippin' Burgers.
But, you know, Greg Garcia took it as another one of these rich guys that wanted to do it as an experience.
But the funny thing about it is they kept after him to get into management because they liked him so bad. But he's an Emmy Award-winning TV guy.
And I don't begrudge this guy at all. It sounds like an interesting book.
Yeah,
but
I like him.
To me, your genuine minimum wage stories come from when you are working on minimum wage.
You have
wage.
To. Yeah. Because you have to.
The one that would stand out in my mind is when I was working on a tobacco farm. Mm-hmm. And I was working as what is called the suckerer. This is back when I was very, very young. And we were working. People don't realize, you know, you say Connecticut. You say Connecticut.
Tobacco.
Yeah, well, Tobacco Valley, guys.
Sure.
I mean, that's where, you know, you ever hear Connecticut Shade?
No.
When you're talking about a cigar, the wrapper is Connecticut Shade.
Ah.
Well, they have shade grown and they have what's called broadleaf.
Uh-huh.
Broadleaf would go into your like White Owl cigars, the cheap cigars, and that's what we grew up in Connecticut. And in my little hometown, you know, back in the days before it became Suburbia USA, this is what we would do. And I was, that's what we did in my town. You didn't paint houses. You didn't have a paper route. You pick tobacco.
Wow.
And suckering is
suckering.
The most tedious thing in a garden.
You know what I'm talking about.
Well, I've done it with corn.
Okay.
What happened is it's a non-fruit or non-usable portion of the plant that grows
at the
base.
It's a weed that actually grows on the stalk
it's
of the plant.
It's part of the plant.
Okay. It's part of the plant. And a suckerer, this is what I did because I was 14 or 15 when I was doing this.
And sexy.
And yes, sexy. What was I doing at 14? I lasted 3 weeks.
Wow, and tough work.
It's backbreaking because you have to walk the whole length of the row.
This is
stooped over.
Suckering is taking the weeds that grow off the stalk of the plant and breaking them off and throwing them on the ground.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then the guy comes by with the axe to cut down the tobacco plant. They don't have that in corn. In tobacco,
no.
The guy comes by and he would have the tobacco axe that he would chop it down with. Now, what would happen is when I'm in this tobacco field, if I wasn't going fast enough, the tobacco boss, the foreman usually, who was doing most of the chopping of the plants down, would come up with the back of the axe handle. He would hit you on the back of your elbow.
Man.
Now, if you've ever had that feeling where your whole hand goes numb.
I think that's illegal.
This we were all townies. We were town kids.
Right.
That's what we did. And it was really, for me, it was as normal as anything. That's what you did. He would hit you on the back of that if you weren't moving quick enough. And I wasn't old enough to be the axe man, the guy that would actually be able to take down the plant. Then, because tobacco juice is so horribly sticky, your hands would get sticky ripping these suckers off the tobacco plant, and you'd reach down.
In the dirt.
And you'd get the dirt on your hands to get rid of the stickiness.
Right, to absorb it.
By lunchtime, and they picked me up at about 5:30 in the morning, and they picked me up in a truck.
At 14 years old, you were doing this?
Yeah, about 5:30. I think 6:30. It's just 6:30 in the morning, I think.
Still,
I'm not sure.
It
was
amazing.
Early. I know it was early. We'd go down, the heat of the day, and we'd go down there, and you'd get the dirt on your fingers, and you get about a quarter inch of dirt and tobacco juice on your hands.
You're making mud gloves.
Uh-huh. And then you'd go into the barn and you'd have your sandwich and you'd eat. And there was
no gloves.
You had to go to the bathroom, the that was it. And you'd move from field to field. And I lasted, seriously, because I was a little kid. I was a total candy ass. I did not. There were kids that I knew that did it every summer that loved it.
I'm surprised you lasted that long.
It sucked so bad. When I quit, I gave my notice. And my notice was just like, I got in on Friday. I said, I'm quitting today. They gave me a wedgie, and at lunch, while all the they were all sitting there enjoying their lunch, sitting there, they took me to a maple tree, and they hung me from my underwear. So I had not only the wedgie, but I was suspended from the tree.
Were there no child labor laws then?
It was what you did. It was just,
Wow.
It was really not. Nobody processed it that way.
You talk about candy ass. I went from mowing lawns to working at being a busboy at a pancake house to working in a pizza parlor to working in a drugstore to a radio station.
That's not bad.
That was my pre-radio career.
Yeah, that was the all-time worst. I went from doing the tobacco picking to painting colonial, those 1600s, 1700s houses.
Right.
Those colonials that they have in New England.
Another backbreaking
job. You paint those with oil-based paint.
Right.
And in August, when you're at the top of a ladder
and
you're working
degrees.
With Joe's done a lot of painting, so he knows what I'm talking
humidity,
about.
Humidity 100%.
Oh, my God. You just be up at the top of this ladder and you're just going as your brain cells are being eaten
alive. I feel woozy.
Everybody's got these stories.
I can't touch suckering tobacco. Suckering corn was bad. You would sucker corn when it was about a foot tall because the suckers would steal strength from the main plant.
And so, you're doing it for your grandfather,
exactly. Right? Exactly. So I did vegetables, picking and harvesting in the morning,
right.
Selling them throughout the day. Christmas trees in December, they sell best that time of year, we found. And then furniture delivery, Safeway, radio.
Oh, furniture delivery sucked.
How high is corn supposed to be by the 4th of July? I can never remember.
Corn is as high as an elephant's eye.
Depends on the variety, but knee-high by 4th of July is
Let's go to Tammy in Maryland, who's been waiting for 21 minutes.
Wow.
Tammy, what have you been waiting for?
Hey, baby.
Hey,
hi Tammy. Yeah, you've been
Tammy with a K.
Tammy talks when we talk. Tammy, you've been waiting for
Cammy.
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 I'm sorry, Cammy. I apologize.
I am so glad to talk to you guys because I have an issue to take up with Miss Beth Ann.
Okay, what's your issue with Miss Beth Ann?
A feline.
Well, she is insecure, like you said yesterday. I don't think she's doing it knowingly, but she is being a blocker. And she should make sure that those pictures are in you guys' hands right away.
Thank you. And Tammy, will your picture be in our hands?
Well, it would be, except for I have a couple of issues that I don't really want to show everybody.
You don't photograph?
Not that I'm insecure, but hey, it takes a real man to see my shots.
Well, Cammy, don't you think, Cammy, if we take care of Ms. McBride, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Get her a man to take care of her needs that she'll come along.
That is exactly it. Amen, I mean, she needs to be a little more with it. She's got to let down her sexual inhibitions, and I think it's blocking her creative juices.
Good for you, Tammy.
Thank you, Tammy.
Really messing up the show.
We appreciate the call. Thanks for calling,
Tell her
Tammy.
To lighten up.
All right, baby. Thank you very much for calling.
Have a good one.
Let's go to Matt. Matt in Sacramento. Matt, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Radio God. How's it going?
It's going great. What can we do for
you? I've really been enjoying the interviews you've been having in the past month with your new show, man, and it gives your show its own flavor. It's not just the Don and Mike show without Don. It really is your show. Mm-hmm. Good job, man.
Thank you very much. Nice appreciate call. The call, Matt. That's very nice of you.
Nice call.
We're going to take a break. We'll come back with the Hollywood Hot Sheets. Mm-hmm. And also, if you've got a minimum wage story, we'll talk to you about that.
Sure.
Got a little free swim, as it were. 877-365-3636. You can talk about that. You can talk about Beth Ann and her sexual frustrations. Mm-hmm. You can talk about Biker Friday coming up. And we'll also open up the audio vault. That's coming up next on The Big Show. We'll be right this after that.
It's the Mike O'Mara Show.